You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, welcome back to Mid-Mornings on Civic Media. My name is Greg Bach. I am your host here in Radio Park, live in Racine. And you are our guests, our friends, our buddies, pals. We appreciate your time and we appreciate you spending your time with us this morning. If you ever want to be part of the conversation, you can always call or text. It's the same number. It's 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Leave a comment on that live stream. We're on Facebook, YouTube, and the site that we still call Twitter. Still lots of great show ahead of you at 10:35. We're talking to Paul Noonan from the Acme Packing Company about the big playoff game this Saturday, Packers versus Bears, and also how the actions in Venezuela this past weekend have knock-on effects for the Milwaukee Brewers. So don't go anywhere. And of course, we'll always close things out with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Today it is the private menu edition. So you don't want to go anywhere. We got another great hour ahead. And then after us, Tom Hartman, and then John and Gordy in the afternoon, Pete Schwabel with Nightlife. Just stick with Civic Media. We got you covered. Right now, though, we still have Jim Santel here as our guest. He is the host of Amicus, a law review, which is on Civic Media every Saturday from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. You can also download episodes if you can't catch it live by going to civicmedia.us/shows and getting it on your device, listening to it anytime. I really, really, you know, I think it's a great show. This past Saturday was excellent because you talked at length on what we're about to discuss now, which is the actions in Venezuela by the Trump administration. Last Saturday, we kind of all woke up to the fact that I guess we're bombing a nation and capturing, some say kidnapping, and bringing their president and his wife to America to stand trial for charges I didn't even know existed until Saturday morning. You on your show went into, I mean, I think you spent about two-thirds, Jim, about this topic. Can you give me just a brief overview about what you discussed on Saturday and really where this takes us in the legal waters, both nationally and internationally, on is it an invasion? People are calling it an intervention. What are we intervening? I mean, it just seemed to have happened out of nowhere. And now we're like, oh, I guess we own a bunch of oil in a country now.
Right, right. And necessary, therefore, to go back to law school once again and say, as you and I were chatting on Saturday morning, and often on this broadcast and others, we say, you know what? I can believe two things at the same time. Mm-hmm. I know there's an awful lot of critics out there who say, gee, if we're going to be critical of the president for doing this, let's look at Maduro. Absolutely. Let's look at Maduro. Undeniably, he was charged previously on indictment way back in 2020 and a superseding indictment. He and his wife, other people, for horrific crimes. Again, probable cause to believe that this man has committed crimes that affected the United States of America. That's what a grand jury said. And you can embrace that notion.
Yes.
You can also embrace the notion, as determined by the Carter Center and others, that you know what? He did, in fact, steal the last election. He is an inappropriate person to be in that position. I can believe all of those things about Nicolas Maduro. And at the same time, I can also look at the questions that you just raised and we've talked about before, which is, what is the remedy for that? Okay. And the answer, again, goes back to international law, going back a little bit to the law school sessions that we'd otherwise do. International law, Greg, to answer the question that you posed at the top of your broadcast this morning, it does exist. A lot of it has to do with how it's enforced among that body of international law. It's a thing called the United Nations, right? We all know what that's about.
Are we still a part of that? Are we still a part of that, Jim?
You know, who knows, right? But we think we are, right?
Yeah.
The president appeared in front of the United Nations. We think we're there and we participate in some of that. But again, another good question. But when the United Nations put together, and we endorse this notion, basically it's an Article 2, Sub 4, again, for those purists among the listeners, states that refrain from threatening or using force against another state's territorial integrity or political independence. Basically, that's about sovereignty, right? And says, again, even if the president improperly there, even if the president has done some things, and every reason to believe that Maduro has done horrific things for which he's now facing justice in the Southern District of New York, the question still can be asked and answered in an appropriately inquiry type way whether or not we violated the territorial sovereignty of a sovereign nation. A nation's territory is inviolable, is what the United Nations Charter says. Foreign military forces or occupations generally prohibited without consent. In other words, without the consent of the government, very often seldom does that, right? Or United Nations Security Council authorization. That's one of the categories of international law that applies and should be applied here. Now, what does the president say about this? Well, again, various theories on this. He from time to time goes back to this notion that these are narco-terrorists. We talk about fentanyl, again, significantly. Venezuela is not a significant producer of fentanyl. Cocaine, that sort of thing. Yes, it produces some, principally goes to Europe. Lots of problems with the drug theory. Lots of problems also with other theories that the president is advancing for this. And that's where the debate should take place, mm-hmm. whether or not the justification for violating the sovereignty of a sovereign nation, even knowing that Maduro is the actor that he is, engaged in these horrific acts, presumably, mm-hmm. and probably did not win the last election. Is that the remedy? And again, around the world, including the UN Secretary General condemning this, you and I talked about it on Saturday morning, almost immediately saying this is a violation of the sovereignty of the nation by going in and plucking out the leader, admittedly, an inappropriate leader, right, did not win the election. This is not what international law contemplates, just the opposite.
And from what I understand, the Senate's going to be taking up a bill this week or possibly next week to say that you should not have done this. You need to go through Congress because that is right. What, you know, there's no sense of urgency. If Venezuela would have massively bombed the United States, then there's precedent for the president to take immediate action. But there was nothing here. He didn't even notify certain lawmakers. Guess what side of the aisle they were on about what he was doing? He told oil people before he told them. Right. And then he gets on a press conference and says to everyone in front of the press and his people, we're going to run Venezuela. And mm-hmm. it's just, it seems like once again, this habit of let's do a thing. What are the details? Don't worry about that. We'll get to that later. And now we are sitting here saying, I guess we're going to run another country. And then on top of that, who's going to lead it? And will the leader has to be like us or for us? Or, you know, there's so many questions that no one was asking. They just said, no, we need to go in. And this is not about drugs, because you can point to other situations where, you know, he just pardoned a former president who was a drug trafficker. You know, there's too many holes in this story that just maybe seems like, oh, this is about oil. It's about oil. And that's what's going to, but it's going to seem like we are putting the flag in the country saying we are here to protect you. They didn't ask for our protection. Jim, are you there? I think he's frozen. I thought Calvin, he was listening to me intently, but I guess his screen is for Jim. If you want, give a call on the line here, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. That's also, I'm saying that. So if you want to call in, folks listening, and ask your questions. But we are talking to Jim Santel, who is the host of Amicus, a law review. He is that show is on every Saturday from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. And we're talking about the actions of the United States government against Venezuela this past Saturday, where a lot of us woke up on a Saturday morning and boom, we have bombed Caracas, and we have jettisoned their leader to America to stand trial. But now ask the question, where do we stand from here? We are apparently running Venezuela. We are going to hope they want to install a government. But it really comes down to the fact that the rest of the world is saying you shouldn't have done this. A lot of people in this country are saying you shouldn't have done this. And we stand here saying, what's next? Right, Jim?
Right. And Greg, you're a very good point. Just a moment or so ago about you know, the immediate need to do this, right? The UN Charter, other international law contemplates, yes, if in fact your nation is facing, and again, we'll use the same word as we talked about with Ganesh from Minneapolis, an imminent attack, an imminent armed attack. Okay, you can defend yourself mm-hmm. against that. that's not this, right?
Yeah.
And yes, drug problems are serious. We should be addressing those. An actual or imminent armed attack is what would justify doing this kind of thing under international law, not drug trafficking, which does simply doesn't qualify under international law for this kind of thing. Significant to note, I know people making a lot of comparisons about other things. George Bush, when he went into Iraq, he did exactly what you contemplated or said just a moment or so ago. What did he do? He went to the United States Congress. Mm-hmm. Again, almost certainly premised upon some very bad, false information, but got authorization from Congress to go in and again, in their that situation, invade an otherwise sovereign country, overthrow Saddam Hussein, have him flee from Baghdad. Mm-hmm. That was with congressional support and also international support, including the United Nations. Now, again, a lot of things about Iraq that we can unpack as well, including bad information to go in, but it underscores the process. And even there, we've just been attacked. And even there, under those on September 11th, what does the president do? He goes in and he gets all of these authorizations under international law, doesn't do it unilaterally in the way this president has done it. Again, hasten to add, we're not suggesting that Nicolas Maduro is a good person or has a right to remain in power, but that's a separate issue from what the president's authority is here under international law. It is very, very tenuous.
Yeah, and I get the next steps, I guess, are how as a country are we going to be involved, and how can we legally be involved in the creation of a new government there? I mean, that we tried doing that 20 years ago and it didn't go well. And they've said that we don't, you know, we simply want to run it. We're going to run it for a little while. Those are his words. We're going to run Venezuela for a little while. I know, Jim, that when you went to law school, was that L1 or L3 where you found out what legally a little while meant?
A little while is, yes, yeah.
But that's just, you know, we have to, again, take it step by step, day by day, and see what's happening. And this is just, you know, if he does this, who's next? Because he's already talked about other countries he wants to go in and take care of and liberate because they're sad, sick, and need our help, but they don't because they haven't asked, and there's no impending threat for us to make an action. So I have to imagine the law, you know, meetups you have at various watering holes here in the area must be a wash with speculation, I'm sure.
Right. Absolutely. And if it's not drugs, if it's not other issues that the president identified, you know, some people are saying, well, again, power, right? That's what Stephen Miller is also talking about. Mm-hmm. We've got the power to do it, and therefore we can do it. People are talking about this new Monroe doctrine, sort of thing. That too doesn't justify simply going in and seizing a foreign leader, bringing him or her back to the United States, and basically overtaking a country.
Yeah.
And that's the larger issue that you just identified, Greg, which should be on the minds and the words of Americans. What is next? We talk about Greenland, other places. Mm-hmm. What is the next effort to exercise that incredible power the president claims to have?
More coming up with Jim Santel. We're going to talk about Hannah Dugan, who recently resigned her position as Milwaukee County Circuit Court Judge after a long trial and conviction. But we're going to talk about the ramifications of that as well. More coming down the pike. Brett, I saw your question. I will see if we can get to that when we come back, but don't go anywhere. You're listening to Mid-Mornings on Civic Media. My name is Greg Bach. I am your host. Get in touch, 855-752-4842. Stay tuned, stay close.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back to Mid-Mornings on Civic Media. My name is Greg Bach. I am your host, and you are listening to us live from Radio Park in Racine. You can always be part of the conversation by calling or texting 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. You leave a comment on that live stream. We are currently streaming on Facebook, YouTube, and the platform that we still call Twitter. Still ahead after the 10:30 break, we got Paul Noonan with sports talking about Bears versus Packers this Saturday and how what we were just talking about, Venezuela, is actually affecting the Brewers. But don't go anywhere. We got that coming up. And of course, this shouldn't be a thing. Private menu edition coming up. And then great programming throughout the day. Tom Hartman from 11 to 2. John and Gordy in the afternoon from 2 to 5. And Pete Schwabo with Nightlight from 5 to 8. So stick around. We love you. We have Jim Santel still here talking about all of the big news coming out of the world of law and the events, how they pertain to the world of law. We were talking earlier about the killing of Renee Good in Minneapolis yesterday, Renee Nicole Good, by an ICE agent. We were talking about Venezuela. And I want to get to a question really quick before we talk about Judge Hannah Dugan from Brett in Brown Deer listening on WAUK. He said, what will the, I believe you said this, but just as a repeat, what will the charges on Maduro be? Will they be the ones from the Biden administration or are they using drug trafficking charges?
Right. Great question. And you can go online and pull up, Brett, what you need to focus on is the new indictment that was also announced or released literally as Maduro was being brought back on Saturday to the United States of America.
Oh, Jim froze again. Well, Jim is getting that worked out there. If you just want to call for the last bit of the show, 855-7524, you can see the phone number. You know the phone number. You've said it thousands of times. But we're talking to Jim Santel, who is the host of Amicus. There he is.
Jim. All right. I'm in and out here this morning, I guess, a little bit.
Yeah.
But indicating that a superseding indictment was then returned, plainly in anticipation of his apprehension. Mm-hmm. And that's also what the attorney general made reference to. It drops some defendants. It adds the Nicolas Maduro's wife and basically describes a number of different, kind of refines the charges from 5 years ago. It updates based upon presumably new information. And it's that charge, which again, you can go online and you can pull it up. Just type in Maduro indictment. And you can look at it, and that's what he is now facing in the Southern District of New York. He's had an arraignment. He has denied all that, pled not guilty. Now we go forward. He is in the custody of the United States of America, facing American justice, and will presumably be in custody until that time that he is tried and perhaps beyond.
And in the time we have left, Jim, I wanted to talk about the resignation of Hannah Dugan, former Judge Hannah Dugan. She was a Milwaukee County Circuit Court judge and was arrested last April, convicted in December on charges of obstruction. She, as of this week, has handed in her resignation. What are your thoughts on this? And of course, she still has sentencing to go through, and she has appeals to go through. This is not so much the end of the story, but I think where people might start to tune out, because with her resignation, like, all right, well, that's not we'll move on to something else. But there's still a lot left to tell in the story.
Absolutely. And what's going on right now, and again, I think the big news, as you said, is she has issued a letter of resignation, which means she is no longer a circuit court judge. I would offer my own perspective. I know her well, as I've said before on this broadcast and others. This is a gracious thing to do. She is not obliged to do it. What she's doing is she's doing something in the interests of the community, because as long as she retains that position, which she would, pending all these other things which we can talk about, there is no one in that position. And so this enables the governor to appoint someone new, ultimately for that person presumably to run for office and to deal with the administrative things of delivering justice here in Milwaukee County and throughout the state. So that is what she has done. To your other very important factual point, this is not the end. This is no small matter that she has been found guilty by a jury of one count of the two counts of the indictment. This is the felony count. What's happening right now is her attorneys, and on behalf of her, have filed motions challenging that verdict, including, for example, the jury instructions that Judge Adelman issued that were probably fairly dispositive in this split verdict. The jury asking, how do we interpret the two charges here? The judge gave them instructions. The defense obviously objecting to a portion of that. And they're going to be going back to Judge Adelman saying, you made a mistake. And because of that mistake, she should get a new trial. They will also be raising all the other issues, evidentiary issues, including those issues early on. Remember this, Greg, and listeners, about the 10th Amendment, about her having immunities. All those things can be revisited in post-trial motions, which they will do. If the judge then denies all of that, then he sets this on for sentencing, probably sometime in the spring. Only after sentencing then would she presumably appeal this to the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. The upshot of that overlong exposition of criminal process here is it is going to be a long time before this is a final judgment, probably late in this year, maybe even early next year.
And there's two things I wanted to talk about really quick before we got out of here. One, according to the Wisconsin Public Radio, Governor Tony Evers has appointed a new judge to fill in. That is Owen Piotrowski, who worked as an assistant district attorney in Milwaukee County. So he, as of February 1st, will fill that role vacated by Hannah Dugan. And yes, we will continue to talk about this topic because I think it's important to see where this goes. Michael on the text line listening on WCFW, he says, how about reporting on the full name of the ICE officer who pulled the trigger? As far as I know, they haven't released that yet. There was a mask on the man's face, and I have not seen anything come through yet. But as we know more, we'll report more. We'll talk about it more. But Jim Santel, thank you so much for being here today. I appreciate your time. You can catch Amicus, a law review, Saturday mornings, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. You can catch the repeats. Go into civicmedia.us/shows. Download them to your device. Listen anytime. Jim, we'll talk to you very soon, my friend. Have a great weekend.
Always an honor, Greg.
When we come back, talking to Acme Packing Company's very own Paul Noonan about the Packers versus Bears this Saturday and how the actions in Venezuela have an effect on the Brewers. Don't go anywhere. Mid-mornings on Civic Media. Stay tuned, stay informed, stay close. Welcome back to Mid-Mornings on Civic Media. My name is Greg Bach. I am your host. You are listening to us live from Radio Park in Racine. You can be part of the conversation anytime you'd like by calling or texting. The number is the same, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Leave a comment on that live stream. We are currently live streaming on Facebook, YouTube, and the platform that we still call Twitter. Still ahead, we got This Shouldn't Be a Thing, Private Menu Edition, and then after us, after the 11 o'clock news, Tom Hartman from 11 to 2, John and Gordy in the afternoon from 2 to 5, and then, of course, 5 to 8, we have Pete Schwab with Nightlife, so don't go anywhere. Stick around. You can stream us on the app. Get the Civic Media app if you don't have it, or you can listen to us live on your radio station of choice, like WAUK. So we're happy you're here. We're happy you're spending time with us. We're spending some time now with one of our favorites, one of our sports gurus. He is a writer for the Acme Packing Company. He is here every other week. His name is Paul Noonan. Paul, good morning. Happy New Year. How are you doing today, my friend?
Hey. Good morning, everybody. I'm doing great. Great. And, looking forward to the game this weekend.
What game are you talking about? I don't know about the game. So this is the playoffs, correct?
Yes.
Playoffs. Packers, Bears in Chicago. I feel like the Chicago Bears fans, tell me if I'm wrong. Do Chicago Bears fans have a reason to be excited this weekend?
They do. They for sure do. The Bears are a good team. They were lucky this year, to be perfectly honest. And I'm happy to rip lucky teams and bet against them in the playoffs. But the Bears actually sort of got lucky early, got some wins while they were lucky, and then improved. They got better as the season went on legitimately. Part of that is because they knocked their rookie class out of the park. They drafted, frankly, much better than we did this year, which is unfortunate. They have a left tackle for the future in Trupolo, and Luther Burden and Colston Loveland, their first and second or third round picks, receiver and tight end, have been like absolutely great. Mm-hmm. So the Bears have gotten better. They're not perfect. They have weaknesses. Their defense is worse than the Packers' defense is, even without Micah Parsons. But this is like a toss-up game, and there's going to be some randomness as well, because this game is going to be at Soldier Field on Saturday night, and there's likely to be some weather. It's very possible to get some precipitation, and that just throws a big monkey wrench into everything. Probably helps the Bears a little bit. They're a little bit better at running the ball than the Packers are, but anybody who thinks they're going to call what's going to happen in this game is lying to you. Not even Vegas. This game is all over the map point spread wise. Yeah. You can't even get a straight answer out of a book on who's going to win this game. And usually they're all aligned on things. So should be fun. But the Packers have a good chance here, too. So I'm looking forward to it. They used the last week of the season to get themselves healthy. They benched basically every starter against Minnesota, which is why they got destroyed. but it is absolutely what they needed to do to get ready for this game. They did lose Bo Melton in that game, mm-hmm. which is unfortunate. He's out for the rest of the playoffs. They put him on IR. You know, he's a good special teamer. He actually had a really nice deep catch in the last Bear game as the fifth receiver on the field. And so that one hurts a little bit. Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, they should be as healthy as they've been in ages. And that's the main thing that's been holding the Packers back.
Well, and that's, you know, when you talk about a season that's based on luck, or not based, but luck is definitely a factor for the Bears. I feel like throughout the season for the Packers, it's been about, all right, it's a bad week, but let's keep on moving. We can beat Carolina. We can beat the Browns. We can beat the Cowboys, and we're either losing or tying and never seem to be picking up a lot of momentum. But yet here we are in the first round of the playoffs. You know, there is a certain amount of luck for the Packers as well, but it doesn't feel as inspiring. It almost feels like, well, we made it this far this season, so that's good. And then, okay, it sucks if we lose to the Bears, but really this has been kind of an inconsistent season for the Packers about how they're playing the game and utilizing the players correctly, especially with such a huge pickup with Micah Parsons. I mean, when Micah Parsons got signed, people were losing their minds. Like when the Bucks signed Damian Lillard, and I would say that his season has been especially now that he's out on injury.
I think Parsons was actually great before he got hurt.
Yeah.
And on underlying statistics, they were one of the three best teams in football until Parsons went down.
Gotcha.
They were a legitimate Super Bowl favorite. Parsons, if nothing else, freed up a lot of other people to do work. He got held a lot. They sent tape on him every week. But he was good against the run and pass, and they haven't really been able to replace him pass rush-wise. So there's that. If you want to be optimistic about this weekend, the teams that the Packers struggled against, I'd hesitate to call it inconsistent. They all had something in common,
yeah.
which is that they were all very good defensive teams that were super flawed in other ways. Like Cleveland is terrible. Their offense is awful. We did catch them at a bad time when they actually had Joe Flacco at quarterback, mm-hmm. who was at least competent. But they're one of the best defensive teams in the league. Carolina is not as good on defense as Cleveland is, but it is what they're good at. They're not a good offensive team either. The Packers do struggle against those teams, and if we were running up against a good defense, by the way, if we win this week, we play Seattle next week.
Yeah,
they're not only the best defense in football this year, they're one of the best defenses of the last quarter century. This is a weird season for that. Houston actually is as well on the other side of the bracket. So, I mean, you got to get by the Bears first, but if we do and we play Seattle next week, we can talk a lot about how they've struggled against the Clevelands and Carolinas of the world. That's going to matter a lot more. The Bears have one of the five worst defenses in the league, and when the Packers have played defenses like this, they've generally lit them up. They didn't really let up the Bears last time, but Love got hurt in that game. Malik Willis is a good backup quarterback, but when you run the ball as much as you do with Malik Willis, it slows everything down. They should put up points, if nothing else.
Well, and that's the question, too, is something that you and J.R. Ratcliffe had talked to us about. And by the way, if you're just joining us here on Mid-Mornings on Civic Media, we're talking to Paul Noonan. He is a writer for the Acme Packing Company. And one of the things that you both have spoken about is that, you know, give Jordan the ball to throw. Give him the – he can throw the ball. Let him throw the – stop doing pass rush. Let him throw the ball and see where it lands. And do you feel like that's where it's going to happen maybe on Saturday?
Yes, and this ties into my biggest worry about this game too, which is the Packers have for the past several years under LaFleur, especially with Josh Jacobs, been very good at running the ball. That is not the case this year, but they haven't changed their tendencies. Their offensive line is worse this year than it's been in a while. It's not a good run blocking line. And Josh Jacobs has been hurt for a majority of the season. And you can tell when he's hurt because he's far less effective. You can actually see it. We have expected rushing stats that we keep on the back end that basically tell you how much or fewer you get versus what's blocked for you. When he's healthy, he's one of the best at creating extra yards, which is good this year because he needs to. But when he's hurt, he turns into one of the worst. He's been one of the worst for a few weeks in a row. Hopefully the time off has helped. But this is a game where you should pass. The Bears' pass rush is atrocious. It is one of the worst in the league. They have one good cornerback. That's Jalen Johnson. He's excellent. Everybody else is pretty suspect. You can do damage against the Bears' secondary. This is a game where the Packers should throw 35 to 40 times by play design, not because they're trying to come back. Matt LaFleur has been hesitant to do that a lot of the time. And they get themselves in trouble because Jacobs gets stuffed a lot. And then they're looking at third and long, second and long situations where if you know what's coming, you can stop it even if your defense is bad. So they definitely run too much this year. And they, I would say they cost themselves a couple of drives a game by trying to run the ball when they shouldn't be trying to run the ball. And that's my biggest worry about this game is they don't learn from their previous mistakes.
Even though they have every opportunity to watch tape and sit down and talk about it, it seems like, because it seems like those are the consistent things that are brought up. And so it'll be, I'll be interested to see what the Packers do on Saturday against the Bears in Chicago. That will be, I'm sure I will see it all over social media. And one half of my friends will be way too excited. One half of my friends will be way too depressed. Either way, it's Midwestern sports. We're built for this kind of thing. In the time we have left, I want to talk about something, and we don't usually, like, this is kind of a, this is a political topic, but it actually touches on Wisconsin sports, and that is the actions in Venezuela last Saturday have ramifications on the Brewers. Can you speak more on that, Paul?
Significant ramifications above and beyond what's going on right now. So every club in baseball has a significant outreach to all of the other countries that routinely produce good baseball players. Some of those are not favored by the United States right now, to put it lightly, Cuba and Venezuela being the major two. Yeah. The Brewers' largest developmental facility outside of the United States is in Venezuela, and it has produced many of their best prospects lately, Jackson Chourio being foremost above among them. A bunch of Brewers have been playing in the Venezuelan Summer League this this summer and are currently there. And since travel between the two countries is fraught, to say the least, and honestly, immigration and citizenship questions are fraught, it's an open question, I think, as to how easy it's going to be to get players back from Venezuela and transfer going between. So the big ones being Jackson Chourio is there right now. The Brewers' best prospect, likely to be their best player going forward, is there, as are Andrew Monasterio and one of their top prospects, Jefferson Caro. Now, William Contreras is also Venezuelan. He is not there. He is safely in the United States at the moment. But if tensions continue to rise, I mean, we're beyond tensions rising. We're well past that. If this compromises the Brewers' Venezuelan outreach and development programs, it severely impacts the team long-term as well in their ability to recruit from Venezuela. And a lot of teams, I think, shortly, may be hurt by similar issues in Cuba too. But we'll get to that when that happens. But this is a problem right now. The Brewers have a bunch of valuable players in Venezuela, and it's hard to plan for things when there are not clear-cut laws, methods to move between states, to move between countries. So it's a problem, and it's not solved yet.
And, you know, I'm trying, based on the history of this current administration, is it just a matter of Rob Manfred getting on the phone, calling the White House and saying, look, we can't be a part of this, but we need these players, we need these individuals here. Literally, what can you do for us? Because they're an investment in they're an investment in the United States. So is it him getting on the phone? I mean, have you ever seen anything like this before? Do they intervene and call the White House and try to flex a little muscle?
It probably is. And baseball has been actively sucking up to the current administration, I think, with these issues in mind, which it's weird. You know, the United States has had the rule of law in place for most of the last couple hundred years. But this administration is much more about sucking up and greasing skids, and baseball is frankly pretty good at that. Most businesses that have large international organizations have some ability to, you know, outreach in situations like this to at least understand what's going on. Baseball being high profile, you know, a celebrity business to a large extent, is probably going to be better at it than most. But you have to be careful too, because if you even accidentally step on yourself and hack off the administration, they're likely to respond poorly to that. So, you know, this is a, it's a hard line to tread right now. It's not supposed to be what America is about. But baseball will probably be able to navigate this. They are a good, well-run, cynical business, and they're, you know, this is the same organization that has an antitrust exemption by one of the worst Supreme Court decisions in history.
Yeah,
they'll probably be fine.
Oh, that's an oldie but goodie. And before we go really quick, Andrew from Maine says, how much will it cost to get the players back? Rename third base at AmFam Trump base, something like that. We'll make it worth. We'll wet the whistle, my friends. Paul Noonan is a writer for the Acme Packing Company. We always enjoy having him here. We'll see you in a couple weeks, my friend, and talk the rest of the Packers seasons or do a wrap-up.
We'll see.
But have a great weekend, Paul. Thank you for being here.
You too.
All right, when we come back, This Shouldn't Be a Thing, Private Menu Edition. Don't go anywhere. Mid-mornings on Civic Media Radio Network. Stay tuned. Stay close.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to Mid-Mornings on Civic Media. My name is Greg Bach. I'm your host. I'm your buddy, your pal, coming to you live from Radio Park here in Racine, along with Calvin Butenhoff on the ones and twos. We are your friends, and we thank you for being here this morning. As always, you can get in touch with us by calling or texting. The number is the same, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Comments go on the live stream if you're watching there by going to Facebook, YouTube, or the platform that we still call Twitter. Very much looking forward to the show tomorrow. We have Layla Merrifield, who is the president of the Wisconsin Technical College System. Earlier this week, we were talking with Miranda Dunlap from the Wisconsin Watch about a great tech program in Appleton. We're going to talk with President Merrifield about the tech school landscape here in Wisconsin, why it's so important. I'm a huge fan of it. I'm a big proponent of tech schools, vocational schools, but that's going to be in the first hour. In the second hour, I'm very excited about this. Rachel Bernard is the dining critic from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We're going to be talking about her wrap-up of 2025, what she's seen, what she's enjoyed, maybe what she hasn't enjoyed, but also I want to know what it's like to be a dining critic, because I think that's an amazing job. But that's all going to be tomorrow on the show. As always, if you ever want to get in touch with us, you want to send us a thought, an idea, guest topic, you can always do that by going, reaching out by via janesays@civicmedia.us. That email still is operational, like the Death Star in the first Star Wars movie. janesays@civicmedia.us. You can also use that to send us any thoughts for our next segment, because it's 10:54, which, Calvin, it means one thing and one thing only. That's time for
This Shouldn't Be a Thing.
Again, if you have a thought that could be for This Shouldn't Be a Thing, send it in to Calvin and me, janesays@civicmedia.us. Now, today is the private menu edition. This comes by way of Dex Erto, which I've never heard of, but Michael Gwilliam has the byline on this. The headline reads, "Man sues restaurant after promotional TikTok video exposes his secret affair." Yeah, an Italian man is taking legal action against a restaurant for a TikTok video unexpectedly revealing his alleged extramarital affair and helped end his marriage. I would say, with that first sentence, I would say the man having the extramarital affair helped end his marriage, not so much a TikTok video. But what do I know? I know nothing about social media. I'm on a TikTok once. The 42-year-old man from Catania has filed a lawsuit claiming his privacy was violated when the eatery posted footage of him dining with another woman as part of a social media promotion. According to the local reports, the man told his wife he would be out for a routine business dinner. Wink, wink, routine business dinner. Instead, he spent the evening at the restaurant on a date with a secret lover, which sounds very Italian, by the way. Yeah, very, very Italian. The encounter was captured on camera by staff creating marketing content for the venue. The clip was then later uploaded to TikTok without the customer's knowledge or consent, and the man's wife saw the viral video. I don't know why it went viral. It's a restaurant video. I'm sure because he was having an affair. It went live. She quickly announced that she planned to leave him. Again, I'm sorry, but I've seen way too many Italian love movie, romantic movies where it's, I imagine it's very dramatic and there's a scarf involved. She plans to leave him, ha-ha, ending their marriage and reportedly kicking him out of the house. It's a villa. It overlooks the ocean because that's what everyone... Yeah, now I'm just being stereotypical towards people who live in Italy. Now the Italian consumer rights group, Codacon, says it's seeking damages on his behalf. Francesco Tenassi, a representative for the organization, argued that the restaurant acted unlawfully by filming patrons and sharing the material online. Now, okay. Yes. Did this man do wrong from A to B to C to D? 99.9% of this is all his fault. Yes. I do think, Calvin, tell me your thoughts on this, from a matter of filming and consent, and if there's nothing in like posted in the restaurant saying so, he may have a case saying they didn't have the right. Now, that doesn't bring back his wife. That doesn't bring back his marriage. That doesn't bring back his house. He does have to deal with all of those things that are a result of his really stupid move. But still, I can see something happening because this could possibly be a case.
Yeah. I think because it's explicitly used for promotional materials is why he would have a case, because I feel like you should have to sign up for that kind of thing.
You'd have to be informed. They should say to you, hey, we're doing these videos, you might be posted, are you okay with that? I mean,
yeah, and I mean the article even mentions it, but it definitely reminds me a little bit of the Coldplay concert last year.
Yeah,
that obviously is a different situation because it was a random person in the crowd that filmed the video, and it wouldn't have went viral if they wouldn't have reacted.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's, I just imagine him saying to his wife, look, none of this would have happened had they never filmed the video. You never would have known. And him thinking that actually helps the situation. She's even kicking him out of the house further, maybe into the ocean itself. But the group, Kodakons, goes on to say it is inadmissible that a restaurant films its customers without clear consent and posts the video, exposing the person to unpredictable consequences like the actions of having an extramarital affair. But it'll be interesting to see where this story goes, because while I totally disagree with everything this man did, the law may or may not be on his side. I think it might be on his side, but we'll find out more. But that brings us to the end of another edition of...
This Shouldn't Be a Thing.
I want to thank Calvin. I want to thank Tucker. I want to thank Traffic. I want to thank Engineering. With the combined efforts of all of you, nothing, without that, nothing works. Nothing happens. I'm talking into a microphone that's not even turned on. I want to thank the listeners. I want to thank the viewers. I want to thank the people who reached out via comments, the texters, the live streamers. Really, without you being there, giving us your time, we do not exist. And that is very much appreciated and never taken for granted. So thank you, thank you, thank you. Again, tomorrow we'll be talking to the president of the Wisconsin Technical College System and the dining critic from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. But don't go anywhere. After the news break, we got Tom Hartman from 11 to 2. We've got John and Gordy from 2 to 5. And then from 5 to 8, Pete Schwab with Nightlight. Have yourself a wonderful day, everybody. My name is Greg Bach. I've been your host. This is Mid-Mornings with Civic Media. Stay tuned, stay informed, stay close.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.